Well, I know we've got a lot of visitors, but we also have a lot of our standard crew as well. And for those of you who are a part of the congregation here, you know that last week we had Ron Weaver come in and speak, and he spoke about dinosaurs and dragons. And I'm sitting there the entire time just loving the lesson because I love evidence sermons, but also going, how on earth do you follow up with that? Because the next time I preach, people are going to think, but it's not dinosaurs or dragons. So I came with aliens. This morning is going to be a slightly different sermon than I normally give because it's a Bible evidence sermon, and we're not going to look a lot at verses because, well, the whole point of it is, let me give you some evidence that God is and the Bible is, and so then you can maybe be interested in reading what the Bible says. So what we're going to do is we're going to do what God says, which is, if you look over in Psalm 19, it says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims His handiwork. And there is no doubt you do not need a telescope to understand or appreciate the glory of God that can be seen in the sky. But if you do have one of those things, all of a sudden you begin to realize how vast the universe is. And people who are Christians and atheists alike have searched the heavens for great things. And there is a large portion of society and culture that would love to believe in aliens. And a large portion of the scientific community that loves the idea of aliens. And so I'm going to show how aliens and the search for aliens has found God. Because it's really true. So this is the logo for the SETI Institute. SETI is for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And it's been around for quite a while. In fact, SETI is, it's been supported by tax dollars. It was for about 25 years. At a certain point, the U.S. government got a little bit of backlash from that, and people started saying, you mean my tax dollars are paying to search for aliens? That's why I'm paying so much for taxes? And so they had to stop doing it. Though kind of, if you get technical about it, we are still supporting them because one of their major funders is NASA, and you know who pays for NASA? That's us. So we're not directly supporting them. But through private funding, it continues to this day. They've got a website. They're very, very active. Those giant arrays that I showed you on the first slide, they use those. They're not the only ones who use those, but they use those quite frequently to search for aliens, for extraterrestrial intelligence. And the interesting thing about an organization that's going to look for money is they have to be able to explain why you should give them money. And so the SETI Institute has to explain in a way that the public could understand why it is an intelligent process to look for aliens and how we go about doing that. Which is really kind of interesting to me because the whole idea of aliens is saying there's something out there that is not human, but is intelligent. Which, you know, is kind of interesting because when you talk about God, what are you really saying? We're looking for something out there that's not human, but is intelligent. And typically, when you go to the movies, the aliens are way more intelligent than us. And so when you're searching for God, it's the same, right? You should be looking for intelligence that is superior to human intelligence. So how does SETI go about searching for aliens? What is the scientific standard for finding intelligent life abroad? This is from their actual website. I'm just, it's here in small print, but I'll make it bigger for you. The SETI Institute, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, is an exploratory science. And this is, by the way, accepted by the scientific community at large. So the evolutionists and all those guys, they say this is science. So whatever I tell you, it's not tongue-in-cheek. This is agreed. I mean, one of the first guys who started SETI was Carl Sagan, who's a giant science nerd and wrote a bunch of books and is famous mostly for those. This is considered real hard science. So as much as we're like searching for aliens, somebody does that for a living? Yeah, they do it for a living and they call it hard science. It's called exploratory science. Seeks evidence of life in the universe by looking for some signature of its technology. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Because the SETI Institute, what they acknowledge is we don't know what's out there, but we're assuming there's something out there that's also intelligent like us. And so we begin to search the heavens for some signature of intelligent life. And I go, well, wait a second. If you could find a signature for intelligent life, if we know what intelligent life, its signature looks like, maybe we could apply that to the search for God. So here's how they do it. This is from their website where you got the dot, dot, dots. I skipped the boring stuff. Most cosmic radio sources are very broadband. They broadcast over a very wide range of frequencies. For example, the radio emission from a quasar would span most of the diagram above. There's a diagram that's boring, and I skipped it. And the amount of power would change very slowly over the frequency range. Okay, let me explain that to you. What they're saying is, out in the cosmos, stars, quasars, all the stuff out there emits radio frequencies. But it does it on a very broad band. It's like white noise. You know, if you... like turning on the television. Oh no, how many people remember antenna television? I may be already narrowing my audience, but back when you had the radio antennas for your television, if you didn't get a clear signal, you'd just kind of get the white background. Well, stars and stuff, they emit emissions. They emit microwave signals and radio wave signals, but they're always on a very broad array. In other words, it's not organized, it's not specific to any specific band. So all that noise out there that we listened for, it's normally very generic and randomized. Signals produced by technology for communication can be much narrower than any known astrophysical source. This illustrates a clear way to distinguish extraterrestrial communication signals from astrophysical signals. Look for very narrow frequency components. Okay, so here's the idea. They put these giant radio antennas out and they're large arrays, and they search the heavens, and they're looking for a narrow band frequency. So just like right now, there's radio waves traveling through the air right now and through your body and all sorts of things, and if you think about it too much, it'll make you feel squidgy and weird. But very few of those have any actual information in them, right? When you go to listen to your radio, you dial into a very narrow bandwidth, and there's very... specific patterned information being sent on that narrow band of radio that you've dialed into, and that's how you get music or talk radio or NPR, or, you know, whatever it is that they're going to broadcast. That's how you get it. Is the way intelligent beings use these radio waves is a way that you don't find in the normal world, which is they narrow it down, and then they send very specific, repetitive pattern information through it. And so that's what SETI essentially does, is they, every day, round the clock, they have these large radio arrays and they're pointing them towards the heavens, searching the sky, either very specifically in a deep space or scanning broadly across the whole horizon, looking for narrow band frequencies. And if they ever found one that was patterned, they would say, now wait a second, this is specific, it's patterned, it must come from an intelligent source. And so that's really all they're doing. That's the short version of what the SETI program does. What's interesting about that is that SETI agrees, and once again I want to remind you, this is hard science. This is the way, this is agreed upon exploratory science by this community, scientific community at large. SETI, by saying this, agrees that you can infer intelligent cause without identifying what that intelligence is. Now, what I mean by that is, if they ever got a signal from way far out that was specific, it was patterned, it was repetitive, not random, they would say, there is intelligent life out there. And you would ask them, well, what is the intelligent life? They go, we don't know, but it's definitely intelligent. So what they've done is they've actually said in this area of science that it's okay to say, well, this definitely proves there's some intelligence behind it, but we don't know what that intelligence is. And yet in most science fields, what they have tried to do in evolutionary science is say, since you can't see God, since you can't touch him, since you can't feel him with your hands, he doesn't exist. But the SETI program said the opposite. They said, actually, we don't have to meet the aliens. We just got to have some sort of invisible attribute that proves their existence. Go look in Romans 1. If you look in Romans chapter 1 down in verse 20, that is exactly what God tells us he does. Romans chapter 1 down in verse 20, it says, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful." Your Bible says that is exactly how God describes himself to us. He says, I'm not going to show you me. In fact, Moses said one time, he asked God, he said, God, can I see your face? And God said, I can't show you that. It'll kill you. But what God did say is, I'll show you my attributes. I'll show you things in my creation that prove there is an intelligent being behind it. And we accept that logic when searching for aliens. But we don't accept that logic when searching for God. The scientific community at large does not. So SETI's out there and they're looking for signals. Every day they're looking for signals that are specific, they're patterned, and they're repetitive. Specific meaning a very narrow bandwidth, one that doesn't naturally occur. Pattern meaning that there's some distinguishable system to it. There's an old movie about aliens based off of, I think it was a Carl Sagan book, actually. They got radio signals, and they gave out prime numbers, I think was what they picked up. Ooh, it's prime numbers that are coming through. So there's a pattern to it. And repetitive, one that is sent regularly, consistently. It's not a fluke. We're seeing this pattern repeated over and over and over again. Now, what if we received a message? I want you to just imagine for a second that tomorrow morning you wake up and on the news it says that SETI has received a message from space that was in a language and they are decoding it now and are going to be able to read it. That would be shocking news, wouldn't it? And a sure sign of intelligent life, of intelligence outside of humanity. There would be no argument about it whatsoever. If that news came back, SETI would be all over it, saying, we found aliens. It would make the news everywhere. But I want you to do something for me with that in mind. While they're out there looking in the cosmos for specific patterned and repetitive signals, I want you to drop the telescope and I want you to pick up a microscope. Because what we're going to do is we're going to flip it on its end. While SETI's been out there searching the cosmos for aliens, we're going to use the exact same standard that they use for finding intelligent life, and we're going to go, instead of big, we're going to go small and apply the same exploratory science to DNA. A DNA strand is a marvel. It is a marvel of which Darwin knew nothing about. Darwin, when he showed up on the scene, was not aware of DNA. In fact, Darwin, when he put up his idea of the origin of species, was under the impression that the building blocks of mankind would be very rudimentary, simple, boring things. They would be very simple and not complex at all. Well, of course, as we've dug into the human body and we've gotten better microscopes and we've begun to look at cells and everything like that, we found the exact opposite to be the case. One single cell in your body, of which your body has trillions, is a fascinating factory. I mean, the stuff that's going on there, the mitochondria, the ribosomes, all that kind of stuff is just, I could bore you to tears with how excited I am about it. The truth is, it is just fascinating stuff the more that they find out. But we're not going to look at any of that. We're not going to look at all of the cell. We're just going to look at one itty-bitty dinky part of the cell where the information is. Because that's what SETI's out searching the cosmos for, is information, right? If we find intellectually sufficient, specific, pattern, repetitive information, it proves there must be an intellectual being behind it. Well, hidden within your body and every one of your cells is DNA, which is proof of that very, very thing. DNA, this is a diagram of DNA transcription. Basically, what happens is you have DNA in your body, and your DNA is this stranded helix thing. And what it does is it will tear itself apart, split apart. The RNA will then code itself and then go take those instructions and then tell the cells what to do. I've told you that in such a rudimentary way that DNA scientists just were just appalled at what I just said, because that is way too basic of a way to put it. There's a ton of stuff going on there that they don't know. But essentially, your DNA is the dictionary or encyclopedia that your body goes to anytime it has to make a decision. Anytime a cell has to figure out how to do something, it sends the RNA in there, and it goes and it tears it apart, and it finds in the file folders what it needs to do, says, great, and then it goes and builds whatever needs to be built. That's how you get your hair color. That's how you get your eye color. That's how you ended up with 10 fingers instead of 9 fingers. That's how your body figured out how to give you legs. That's how your heart was designed, which, by the way, is designed in an amazing way. Do you know that God designed your heart in such a way that it has a hole in it? And it has to have that hole in it while you're in the womb. But then when a baby makes its first breath, the first time a baby breathes in, that it shuts that flap closed and sets the circulatory system in place for the rest of your life. And your DNA told it to do all of that stuff. Everything has to happen in a very concise, specific way, specific timing. Everything has to happen, and it all happens because of your DNA. DNA, it unzips, it exposes one side of that double helix, and gives those instructions away. It has a particular order of 4 molecules. It is essentially uses 4 letters to create an alphabet. Now, what's impressive is with those 4 letters, it is able to carry a vast amount of information. If you were to describe, I want you to imagine just for a second that I gave you the job of picking one person, and your job for the rest of your life was to write a book to explain down to the smallest detail exactly how that person looked inside and out. How large of a book would you need to make? That is essentially what your DNA does. Your DNA explains you in perfect detail, so that it can be copied from cell to cell to cell in a language, so that each cell can then take whatever it needs to do to make skin cells or eye cells or toenail cells or whatever the case may be, liver cells, and it makes you. And it does it with 4 letters made out of these 4 different molecules. And they are sequenced. That is, they are in a pattern format. They're put in a sequence for order. And every 3 letters forms a word, is what they've figured out. That every, if you're taking DNA and you treat it like a language, which is how DNA science is done, they treat it like a language. And they take it and they figured out every 3 letters, you combine those together, it makes a word. And so then words can form sentences, and sentences can form paragraphs, and paragraphs can create chapters. And so the book of your life is written in DNA. And it's immensely accurate. And you're the proof of how accurate it is, right? Because you work. You got up this morning and everything functioned, or for some of you, most of it functioned. You're an immensely complex creature, and it works day in and day out. They found how much data can be held in it. Harvard figured out how to store 70 billion books in, what was it? It was in 4 grams of DNA, I think. I'm not sure if I had that on the chart here. This is a screenshot. I think right about here is where it says 4 grams. In 4 grams of DNA, they put 70 billion books of information. That is the total world in 70 billion copies of a yet unpublished book, which was 5.5 petabytes, which is equal to 1 million gigabytes, and they were able to put it on there. Oh, I take that back. The 4 grams was not what it wasn't 4 grams of DNA to put 70 billion books. They did that in far less. 4 grams of DNA will carry 1.8 zettabytes of data, and that's enough to store all the information of every book, every piece of literature ever written in the entire world. You could store it all in 4 grams of DNA if you learned how to manipulate it correctly. But it just happened by accident. This is phenomenal stuff that we're finding about DNA. I am convinced that if Darwin had known what you and I know casually, I mean, this is not my life to be a molecular scientist. This is casually, you can find out this information. You can look up just the same stuff that I'm looking up and find it out for yourself. If Darwin knew what you and I can casually look up on the internet, that's internets with a Z at the end, he wouldn't be an atheist. There's no way he would have taught Darwinian evolution and continued that theory. What you and I know just is shocking stuff, and it's a world of science that just didn't exist when evolutionary theory was in its infancy. The Human Genome Project was one of the coolest things humanity's ever done, scientifically speaking. The Human Genome Project was, and this is from their website, it was one of the great feats of exploration in history. An inward voyage of discovery rather than an outward exploration of the planet or the cosmos, which I thought was kind of funny when I went to the Human Genome Project and they made that comparison to SETI themselves unknowingly, right? Instead of looking out into the cosmos for life and intelligence, we said, well, we're going to go and look at all of this information here inside the human body. An inward voyage of discovery. An international research effort to sequence and map all of the genes, together known as the genome, of members of our species, Homo sapiens. It was completed in April 2003. The Human Genome Project gave us the ability for the first time to read nature's complete genetic blueprint for building a human being. Blueprint. I don't know about you, but last time I saw a blueprint, there was an architect. That's how that works. And here it is. What I want you to see is that science, it backs up the idea of God. Scientists who don't want to believe in God sometimes are hypocritical and they use one standard over for SETI and a different one over in biology. But the science, the hard science itself, backs up the evidence of God's existence. His invisible attributes show us a blueprint, a genetic blueprint, a fingerprint that you are made with. And this guy, one of the smartest guys of his time, his name is Antoni Flew. When he saw the things that I'm talking to you about with DNA, he buckled. Antoni Flew was the atheist of his day. He since died. He died in 2010. He was the guy. Before there was Dawkins, there was Flew. There's always one kind of major guy who is the flagship for atheism. And he was it. And everybody followed him the same way that basically everybody follows Dawkins now, or maybe Stephen Hawking. Everybody followed him until the DNA evidence kept coming out and coming out. And more research was done. Things like the Human Genome Project, more and more of it came out. And eventually he came unbuckled from atheism. He couldn't hold himself to it anymore and still feel honest. This is a quote from him. It says, "It now seems to me that the findings of more than 50 years of DNA research have provided materials for a new and enormously powerful argument to design." He didn't believe in the God of the Bible. He never reached that point. But he did say, "I have to reach the point where, as I look at the scientific evidence, I have to agree that this didn't happen on accident. It couldn't have. All this research we've done has come to a conclusion that there's no way, statistically, that it would be possible for blueprints to be created on accident." What I think the DNA material has done is show that intelligence must have been involved in getting these extraordinary, diverse elements together. I find it just fascinating. Here was a guy who, he lived in the scientific community, he was the foremost atheist of his day, And by the way, when he converted, so to speak, away from atheism, it got headlines for like a week, and it was like on page C3 of your newspaper. But I'll tell you, if tomorrow, if Billy Graham tomorrow became an atheist, what do you think would happen? Where would the news be? It'd be A1, front and center, wouldn't it? For a month. This guy, when he flipped sides, they just wanted to bury it. But the truth is, it's really a phenomenal thing because he was at the center of it, and he debated it publicly and eloquently for atheism for years. And to him, the real deal breaker, the thing that finally took his legs right from under him, was DNA, because he said DNA is information and information is intelligent, and it just is not accidental. You're right back to what SETI said. It's patterned, it's specific, it's repetitive. DNA is all of those things. Not to mention, it's just really, really cool. Imagine for a second if SETI received a message from space containing nothing but genetic code. Imagine if from space we received a radio signal with the Human Genome Project's information on it. And so it was just spit through the radio waves, the microwave signals in the air, and their large arrays. They picked it up and they got this pattern that matched the Human Genome Project. What do you think would make the news? Intelligence in space! There really are aliens! Of course it would make the news. Of course it would make the news, and rightfully so. But it's right here in front of us. And every drop of your blood and every skin cell and a swab of your cheek is all that information. You don't have to hit the cosmos. You hit a microscope and you see one single cell and you splice it open. You can begin to see that level of information on such a small scale. And as we've seen in computing, it's always been harder to make things small, isn't it? Right? In the computer world, what is more impressive? Those large one-room computers they had with the actual disks. You know, when you talk about your hard drive crashing, that's where that came from. Those disks would turn and you'd hear a big boom in the room, and that was a hard drive crashing. That's where you got that terminology from. Which is more impressive, that or your iPhone, which has like thousands of times more computing power in a small space? Whenever you can make information and put it in a smaller form factor, you're showing an increased level of technology. Forget the cosmos, take a drop of blood. Here's God showing us his invisible attributes in such a simple way. In this era of abundant science, where does the information lead? See, I think it very clearly leads exactly where Anthony Flew said it led. He said, I have to accept intelligence, and when asked why, he said, I had to go where the evidence leads. And that, of all of his quotes, that's my favorite one. You have to go where the evidence leads. Not where the scientists lead you, because scientists have bias. Not even where the preachers lead you, because preachers have bias too. But go where the evidence leads. And the evidence of the world around us very clearly says that there is a God. And yet here we are. And we want to believe in these guys. I much prefer believing in this kind of alien, by the way, as opposed to some of the scary ones. But we desperately love the idea of searching for aliens. Can we find intelligent life? Can we find information from the cosmos of another being greater and superior to us that's out there in this world and we're not alone? We will search forever with billions of dollars for this. But when the information's right in front of us, we ignore it. Of a divine being who's far superior to us, technologically advanced, wise and imaginative and creative, and far superior to us not only in those areas of intelligence and power, but he's also far superior to us in other areas too, like love, grace and mercy, compassion and empathy, all of these things that you would hope that a more intelligent being would also be better at, right? We're made in his image. And so when we look at the Creator through the invisible attributes seen through his creation, we see a God of intelligence and wonder and beauty. our God, he is alive. And all you got to do is look for aliens to find him. It's a beautiful thing that you and I get to enjoy living in this world of scientific enlightenment. It is a really exciting time because if you're willing to look on page C3 of the newspaper, if you're willing to do a little bit of digging for the stuff that they don't like to talk about because it doesn't match the political agenda, you can find some really fascinating stuff about the character and mind of your God. The invitation song is number 389. If you've not obeyed the gospel and you're ready to give your life over to deity, to a being far superior to us who loves far superior than anybody on this earth loves, who loves you so much that he sent his son to die for you. If you're ready to obey the gospel, to be baptized, to become a Christian, and give your life to him, don't wait any longer. And if you're a Christian who needs to turn back to this God, don't wait for that either. Because someday we will all meet him, and we will see him face to face. And I want that to be for you, what God wants it to be for you, the greatest day of your life. If we can help you with either of those things, please come forward as we stand and sing number 389.